Здравейте, Бог, Буна und Здраву, liebe Balkan-Freunde und willkommen zur vierten Ausgabe des Podcasts. Ja, wer hätte das noch vor drei Folgen gedacht? Ich jedenfalls nicht, aber es geht weiter, auch wenn mit etwas längeren Pausen, wofür es mir wirklich leid tut, aber so ist es halt. Deswegen ist es auch ein Podcast, man kann senden, wann man will und weil das ein Podcast ist, ignoriere ich auch sämtliche Stichtage und rede über Themen, die die Zeitungen schon längst abgefrühstückt haben oder Redakteure nichts von hören wollen, weil der Tag halt vorbei ist. Genau, und deswegen reden wir heute über Dayton, über das Dayton-Abkommen, das am 21. November 1995 unterzeichnet wurde und das den Krieg in Bosnien und Herzegowina beendet hat, also sprich Frieden ins Land gebracht hat. Aber Frieden kann man bekanntlicherweise nicht essen. Also die Frage ist, was hat dieses Abkommen den Menschen in Bosnien gebracht, 20 Jahre danach? Und darüber spreche ich heute mit Velma Šarić. Sie ist die Gründerin des Post-Conflict Research Centers in Sarajevo. Und ich spiele euch auch ein paar Statements von einer Diskussion ein, die diese Woche in Köln stattgefunden hat und unter anderem von der Südosteuropa-Gesellschaft und dem Forum Ziviler Friedensdienst organisiert wurde. Aber dazu gleich mehr. Erst einmal kurz ein paar Stichpunkte zu Dayton. Das Abkommen wurde, wie gesagt, 1995 in der US-amerikanischen Stadt Dayton unterzeichnet, also in der Nähe von Dayton, aber das Abkommen kennt man halt als das Dayton-Abkommen. Jedenfalls, es war ein Werk der Amerikaner oder besser gesagt ein Werk Richard Holbrooks, der vor ein paar Jahren gestorben ist. Also jedenfalls die Amerikaner haben den Ton angegeben, die Europäer hatten da weniger Mitspracherecht. Und das Ergebnis war, dass die involvierten Armeen demobilisiert wurden und es wurde eine Struktur geschaffen, eine internationale Struktur. Das war das Office of High Representative. Und seine Aufgabe war, die Umsetzung des Abkommens zu überwachen und den Wiederaufbau irgendwie zu koordinieren. Und die OSZE wurde mit den Nachkriegswahlen beauftragt, die schon ein Jahr danach stattgefunden haben, also 1996. Und viele Kritiker sagen, dass es eindeutig viel zu früh war. Man hätte das wie in Deutschland machen sollen nach dem Zweiten Weltkrieg, dass einfach die Wahlen, man hätte die Wahlen viel später organisieren sollen. Und nicht so früh. Und die Kritiker sagen, das war einer der Gründe, wieso das Land also noch so geteilt ist. Also die gute Nachricht, der Krieg wurde beendet. Die schlechte ist, dass dieses Abkommen immer noch als eine Hypothek für das Land gesehen wird. Dabei war eigentlich dieses Abkommen nur als eine temporäre Lösung gedacht, aber es wurde letztendlich Bosniens Schicksal. Und heute steht Dayton für Stillstand, für eine Konservierung und Zementierung der Probleme, denn das Abkommen hat das Land einfach ethnisch geteilt entlang der Kriegslinien. Heute gibt es in Bosnien zwei Entitäten. Das ist zum einen die Republika Srpska, wo mehrheitlich Serben leben, und die Föderation, wo Bosniaken und Kroaten leben. Und es gibt auch noch einen Distrikt namens Brčko, also es ist eine sehr komplizierte Struktur, die das Land einfach nur lähmt. Aber das erklärt gleich Velma ganz gut im Interview, das ihr gleich hören könnt. Ich wollte euch nur vorab noch eine Anekdote erzählen. Oder was heißt eine Anekdote? Also eine Geschichte erzählen. Als ich 2012 in Sarajevo war, wollte ich mich mit einem jungen Schriftsteller treffen in Ost-Sarajevo. Ost-Sarajevo gehört zur Republika Srpska, also da leben die Serben. Und im restlichen Sarajevo, was ihr kennt, also quasi in der Hauptstadt, lebt dann der Rest. Also ich war da noch nie in Ost-Sarajevo und habe mich auch total gefreut. Und der meinte, nimm einfach den Bus und steig die letzte Haltestelle aus. Habe ich auch gemacht und ich dachte eigentlich, ich wäre schon in Ost-Sarajevo. Aber da hat er mich abgeholt und meinte, so, jetzt müssen wir noch ein Stückchen laufen und dann sind wir in Ost-Sarajevo. Nicht, dass ich irgendwas gegen Laufen habe, aber ich war wirklich überrascht dann zu hören, dass man nicht mit dem Bus nach Ost-Sarajevo fahren kann. Also die Busse halten kurz vor den Toren Ost-Sarajevos und danach ja, läuft man halt zu Fuß oder man nimmt ein Taxi, wie dem auch sei. Aber allein das zeigt, wie geteilt das Land ist. Selbst eine Stadt, also quasi selbst die Hauptstadt. Genau, das wollte ich euch nochmal kurz erzählen. Und nun zu Velma. Velma und ich haben uns, ich glaube, das war genau das Jahr, genau, 2012 oder 2013 kennengelernt. Ich weiß gar nicht mehr. Ich war jedenfalls wieder auf einer Recherchereise in Sarajevo. Und Velma hat 2010 das Post-Conflict Research Center gegründet, wo sie mit einem kleinen Team Filme über Bosnien macht und verschiedene Projekte und Austauschprogramme. Und für diese Arbeit wurde sie sogar letztes Jahr ausgezeichnet von der UN. Aber das erzählt sie gleich auch im Interview. Das Gespräch haben wir auf Englisch aufgezeichnet, damit ich nicht overvoice und übersetze. Also, es geht los.
Hallo.
Bog, Velma, joj.
Ćao, draga, kako si?
Ja, pa ja sam dobro, jesi ti dobro?
Sve dobro, evo, čekam te.
Super, super. Jel me čuješ, reci, jel me čuješ dobro?
Super te čujem, ti i mene?
Ja tebe isto, nadam se da će to tako ostati, vidit ćemo. Hoćemo onda sad na engleskom?
Može.
Super, okay, Velma, let's continue in English, because as I told you, I don't have to translate it, and otherwise it will take too long for me.
It's so, perfectly fine with me either.
Yeah, great. Velma, as I'm recording now, I want to officially thank you very much for joining me in these late evening hours on Tuesday. But I'm really sorry for this, but I know that you work a lot, never mind what time we have, and never mind if weekdays or weekends, so thanks for this.
Exactly, for me it's also a big pleasure to be your guest, and thank you for invitation, and generally thank you for all hard work related with the Balkan region you do. So
great, very much, thanks. I told you that we are going to talk about Dayton, but less about the political effects of it, but more about your life and the life of young people in, let's call it, post-Dayton Bosnia. So let's start with the 21st of November this year. Did you celebrate the anniversary? Did you throw a party, Velma?
Well, honestly, I didn't. I don't see many reasons, you know, in Bosnia generally for celebration, especially if you're a young person in this country, there is no so many opportunities. So, yes, I mean, I do feel, you know, certain emotions and stuff, but in reality, it looks completely different than celebration in some other countries regarding, you know.
I see. Okay, but let's talk more practically. When you go outside of your home, when you're in this, let's say in a supermarket or in the bus or in the museum, where is Dayton, or where is the heritage or the legacy of Dayton? Where do you see it?
In reality, in my case, and in the case of many of my friends or young people with whom I work through Post-Conflict Research Center, and our network is really extensive, and we have young people from both entities and stuff, I have to be honest and I have to say that young people are sick of these stories regarding Dayton Agreement and everything, you know, what Dayton brought, which is division and really complicated governmental system. So in reality, if you talk to young people, and personally, if you ask me about Dayton, I would see that more as obstacle for us to join EU and have a better, let's say, future. Because, you know, how we can enter the EU with such a complicated governmental structure. So in reality, Dayton, you cannot, you know, you do see and feel consequences. And I'm thinking about Dayton as a peace agreement, which was great during the time when it was signed. In reality, it did stop the war. It did stop the killing. Dayton also did brought some good things. It's not that there is no any improvement in Bosnia, but those are just small steps. Yes, we did certain reforms, like reform of joint army. So, for example, now we have Army of Bosnia, not Army of two entities. We do have joint item, we do have joint flag and stuff like that. But in reality, we have so many obstacles. And if you look what the main obstacle is Dayton, because Dayton is also our constitution.
Yeah.
So in reality, I cannot, I mean, unfortunately, I think that young people are just so sick of these, you know, stories they can hear in the, from the politicians, and somehow they would like to have a better future. Yeah. And go ahead.
But okay, but what is the solution then? Just to kill Dayton and to go on with what?
I mean, we cannot kill Dayton. Like, we cannot kill Dayton. And in reality, I just mentioned these, like, good things which Dayton brought. And I know through my connections and many friends from United States that even the creator or someone who created Richard Holbrooke, late U.S. diplomat, thought that Dayton is just a temporary solution.
Exactly.
He never thought that it will be something permanent. In reality, there is solution. Solution is laying in our local politicians. I mean, I hear so many stories about, you know, like, and certain suggestions how new conference or new Dayton or whatever agreement or something should be established. But in reality, this responsibility is laying on our local politicians who actually jeopardize the Dayton Agreement many times on both sides. Federal politicians, they're using a threats in a latest period, let's say the last 5-10 years ago, they would usually use Dayton and they would send threats to Republika Srpska by saying how, you know, they wanted to kind of kill Dayton or whatever is the word, and Republika Srpska then would send respond because, you know, the Republika Srpska was established to Dayton Agreement. Then they would constantly go back and forth by using, you know, ordinary people during the time when they are doing a massive corruption. And there is actually solution is on local politicians. And yes, I'm not saying that international community is not necessary. We really need help of international community. We couldn't stop the war. We have the Office of High Representative. But in reality, it's on the local politicians. It's on people, people of Bosnia, and especially young people. I see young people as a possible a motor for change, but we need to basically work hard, and we need to kind of have a sense of, you know, better future and belonging to something bigger, which I think in our case the solution is only European Union and NATO integrations and something bigger, which will give us sense that we are more citizens of world and less citizens of this small country, because that is how I see. I don't see any other possibility, or I don't see any other reality, because nobody can help us if the change don't come organically from the country where we have all these issues.
This is a good thought, I think. It depends on the people. It depends on the young people. This is what you said. And you also previously said that you work also with the people from both of the entities where you work. I know that you have friends, Serbian friends, Croatian friends, Bosnian friends, but tell me, is it usual that young people socialize with all the ethnicities, or is it just an anomaly?
It's really sad, you know, when you are thinking that just hour away from Berlin or Munich or Istanbul and all these like places in the world is Sarajevo, where, or Banja Luka, Mostar, and other parts of Bosnia and Balkan, you know, Croatia and Serbia are in similar position, where young people actually don't interact too much between each other. We still have that pure phenomenon of segregation, which is two schools under one roof, where kids of different ethnicities are going to the different halls. They are actually in one school, but they don't interact, and they learn through different curriculum. They learn, you know, different history, different. I mean, we all have the same language. We can understand each other. But in reality, even language is divided according to ethnicity and religion. So it's very rarely, honestly, that, yes, we human rights activists and those who believe in same vision, protection of human rights, we do interact. We meet each other. We are trying to do what we can as a civil society. Unfortunately, civil society is also should take more active role, because I think that what is missing is also strong push and initiative from civil society, because in case of Bosnia, civil society plays enormous role. We do basically what government doesn't do. But we need to be more stronger also and bring young people together, bring them to neutral ideas and neutral projects where, you know, it's not easy for young people from Republika Srpska to come to Sarajevo. You know, many times they blame these kids. This year we commemorate Srebrenica genocide by bringing big visual project of 1 million bones. Those were ceramic bones made in the U.S. So we lay these bones together with the kids from the Balkan and all around the world. And we had kids from Republika Srpska for the first time in Srebrenica. And they would say that, you know, they really wanted to come. But in reality, if someone would, you know, give them lessons and repeat constantly that was a genocide committed by Serbs, they feel burden of previous generations. So we need to be more sensitive how we will approach these young people. We have the biggest youth unemployment rate in the world, 60%. You know, that is in the middle of Europe, 60%. So these young people, you know, are really vulnerable category for manipulation. Many of young people, like from Bosniak Muslim side, nobody actually knows because we don't have such a great statistic, but many of them are going to fight in Iraq and Syria, you know, for 500 euros. And you can see that in media, like main media in our country, they would publish, for example, cover page with a young man holding Kalashnikov, and under you would see the title, 500 euros weekly salary in Syria. You know, average salary in Sarajevo, let's say capital city, is 400 euros. So for someone in small local community with no opportunities, with no access to internet, this seems as a great opportunity, you know, what kind of other perspective they have in their community. So I'm really very honestly for the youth of Bosnia. I'm really very for youth of Balkan, because what is going on is that when I was Tito pioneer, I never learned in history in my school, I never learned during the communism that some crimes have been committed during the Second World War. I never had idea that we had those radical movements, and you know, I never knew it because we were putting things under the carpet. So I'm very with these different perspectives we have, that we are building more animosities. So the solution and the good step was this non-visa regime and an opportunity that, you know, that our young people can travel and meet other people from different parts of the world and interact and see that these differences are actually really stupid, and to see how people are living. But it's also, we are in a specific geographic spot. So take a look now what is going on with this migrant crisis. We have been the road to these refugees. So you never know actually what will happen, and then how the things will be shifted, what priority will be. So for young people of Bosnia and Balkan, it's really difficult, honestly, to deal with the past, move forward. And when you, you know, when you talk to them about Dayton, they would usually say, you know, like, I'm so sick of these stories. They don't want to even like go into that anymore because they don't see a point.
But is there a future without dealing with the past? Because you said they're sick of this, they're sick of Dayton, they want to move on. But can you move on? Do you have a future when you live in a society with three narratives, with three histories?
That is a great question. You know, that is a question on which we all, as civil society, educators, academia, we need to find the right answer. The fact is that we do have three different narratives and three different histories. Once when I said, you know, there are three different histories, someone attacked me, I don't remember, in some public show saying that there is only one truth.
Yeah, his truth, yeah, or hers, I don't know. Everybody has a truth, yeah.
Exactly, and I do agree that, you know, history should be kind of like one. But in reality, what is necessary, and I think what is only possible when you have three different ethnic and national religious groups, when you have three different narratives, is to try to develop empathy, you know, personal empathy, empathy on some general level, and accept that these things did happen on all sides. It's important to work on the events happened during the 90s. Mm-hmm. It's important to educate young people. But if the education will just be one-sided, then there is no point. Mm-hmm. So we are struggling, actually, what every post-conflict country is struggling for years, how to actually, you know, move forward and have a memory on the past. Germany would be a great example, for example, for Bosnia, but we have more complex situations inside of the country. Mm-hmm. So there are some things which have been done by international community, like establishing of international tribunal for former Yugoslavia, are on some very good, let's say, a platform for developing a consensus or some kind of like a joint, at least, perspective about what was going on. So in reality, we cannot move without not knowing and educating about the past. But in reality, if these young people are constantly bombarded with a negative media, because in our case, the problem is also media. We don't have we do have certain number of independent media, mostly supported by international community. But every national big broadcaster is a satellite of political party. Exactly. So these broadcasters, they are featuring content related to war, very radical and very inflammatory. So they are making more damage instead of making more benefit for these people. So what is possible to support independent media to go and work in the local communities, to try to kind of find certain models or put our everything what was going on in the 90s on some joint platform with other conflicts in the world, appointed to young people that horrific things happen in a different part of the world and that people still need to keep going and live together.
Yeah. So you as a civil
go ahead.
So you as a civil society has a lot to do in the future. But tell me, last year, as I mentioned civil society, and you mentioned also the role of the civil society, as far as I know, last year there were a huge protest, at least in Sarajevo, of the civil society. And as far as I know, this was actually the first time of gathering so many people in the streets of Sarajevo. I mean, I can't remember such kind of happening before. What happened with this movement?
Yes, we had explosion of suddenly like big demonstrations and protests on the streets of Tuzla, Sarajevo, Mostar, and some other cities. Actually started as a protest and demonstration from the workers from Tuzla city, those who have been asking for their rights and their salaries for a few years. And at the end, being frustrated, they were protesting, they burned the governmental building in Tuzla. And then spontaneously, people started to gather also in Sarajevo, in the capital city. Ordinary people, civil society organization, and they were requesting certain changes, they were protesting. Unfortunately, it was also shown that we don't know, you know, how to protest because some governmental buildings have been burned. So in one moment, protests or demonstrations really went to do something what was, for me personally, was kind of similar to war, because you didn't know, you know, in which moment someone can step on your door, because if you see that presidency is under the fire, that governmental buildings are under the fire, you are wondering what is going on. You know, is there any possibility that we can relocate and have a peaceful demonstration? Mm-hmm. What actually happened was spontaneous protests of frustrated people, workers, civil societies. But in reality, we didn't have a plan behind. Nobody didn't know what exactly they are requesting from the government. The fact that they burned cantonal governmental building, instead of the fact that they were standing in front of national parliament, which is our state parliament, Canton is just part of the federal, you know, Federation of Bosnia, so it doesn't have an influence on such a high level. But it was clear that people don't even know where to go, that they are so lost in this Dayton structure, because Dayton brought to us 10 cantons in federal part where Bosniaks and Muslims mostly are living, entity of Republika Srpska, Brčko district as a separate level, and then, you know, we have 176 ministries.
Yeah, it's so complicated. Like, it's so funny, Velma. This is
it's
crazy.
Really funny. You know, I was working with some journalist from Switzerland, and then he told me, like, yeah, we have six ministries, and we are thinking to cut on four. And I was really kind of embarrassed, you know, like, Switzerland have a six ministry and they are thinking to cut to four. But it's reality of Dayton. And what happened after protest is we had plenum, like assembly of civil society and ordinary people. They started to send requests to government and what. But what was going on? Like, they didn't have a clear idea, or they didn't have a clear plan what actually they are requesting. What kind of change they want to. So they were asking from a cantonal level certain things like, oh, we wanted to change the system and stuff, which is actually to address to the national level. And, you know, the fact that you don't have a plan and we are missing, you know, like a figure or someone who will, some politician who would be able to bring people together. In our case, Social Democratic Party, which is personally my option, unfortunately also had so many troubles in previous years. So you basically had a sense that Social Democratic Party is not Social Democratic Party, is one ethnic group, you know, party, national party. So we have been lost in this process, and we don't have a strong oppositions. And in reality, it's not that everything is black. I don't want to depress people, and I don't want to say that, you know, like, nothing is okay and nothing is, you know, like, fine. But it is just, you know, like, normal. I think that all this is normal situation after post-Dayton period. We need to find a way. Because I heard that many people are saying how Dayton Agreement actually is you know, good model, and maybe it will be replicated in Syria, Iraq, and some other.
This as well, yeah. But is it, what do you think, actually? I mean, you see Bosnia 20 years after, as a temporary agreement, okay, but as a permanent one, I don't know, what do you think?
I think in our case that people, like, I think that our politicians are aware a little bit that they need to kind of do reforms, and they need to move toward the EU, because we cannot stay. You know, like, Croatia already went, Serbia, it's the fact that they will go soon because they did all these reforms, and their prime minister, it seems that he's doing, like, really, like, good diplomacy, at least, you know, how I can read it in a newspaper. I think that Serbia will be the next country which will join EU, which on some way is a little bit sad, you know, because when we are thinking that we were all in the war together, maybe solution for us was to do a package. You know, like, okay.
All the countries together? What do you mean?
I mean, like, you know, Serbia and Bosnia. When you are thinking about these two countries, and when you are thinking about the conflict we had, you know, the Bosnians, usually when you talk to them, they feel kind of isolated. You know, they feel kind of like, you know, they feel that other countries have been rewarded, like Croatia and Serbia, if they join EU. And Bosnia is left on the margin, like, oh, what we will do. And I do understand that European Union, they are putting so much efforts. They really do. But it's so complicated. And for these people, you know, it's not even understandable, like 176 ministries. Can you imagine someone from Denmark or Norwegian, like, oh, what? And so I do understand that, you know, I think it's normal. I think what is necessary is, like, also the role of U.S. was big was major regarding the stopping the war and signing the Dayton Agreement. What is also necessary is a bigger, let's say, a little bit bigger involvement of U.S. because Bosnia is not priority anymore, which is understandable. But if they want Dayton Agreement as a successful model, you know, which will be replicated, which maybe it can even work in some, you know, some parts. At least I know that for me, Dayton is great because I suffer so much in war that for me, any kind of agreement which would be signed just to stop the killing was great. So I believe that these people in other countries who are currently in the war, you know, would accepted solution, any kind of solution. And I think the Dayton, certain parts of Dayton can be great, but it's on our local politicians. And also it's important that we as the citizens of Bosnia have awareness that, you know, joining the EU will not be that, you know, the door of paradise will be open, that, you know, we need to work toward this. So there is a lot of things which we as a society need to do, get ready, you know, like change it in our system, but also a lot of things which our politicians need to kind of do it. And we need to kind of, I think what would be great is that we don't think about so much about differences we have. We should think more about these joint things which are connecting us as a ethnic group or religious groups, because
This is a great ending, Velma, but before I say goodbye, tell me, because you said we have to work on our future, what are you doing right now, what are your projects?
Well, we do, and I'm going to mention this because we're really proud, we do our Ordinary Heroes project, which is a multimedia educational program educating young people about moral and civil courage and how they can change the certain things in their communities if they take more active role. For this project, which is a film photography education, bringing legacy of ICTY to young people, we receive the first prize for the first intercultural innovation award given by BMW Group from Germany. So we are really proud. And United Nations, they have this special award given to the grassroots organizations. So what we do, we are educating young people. We, in latest 3 years, we were going to 30 different cities, bringing a massive photographic exhibition, holding the trainings, getting and did training of young people. We up till now trained 36 journalists, young people who are doing reporting for our multimedia platform. And we do what we can do as a civil society on grassroots level, because I think if we do work on a grassroots level, if we create and empower new human rights workers and leaders, especially young people, I think that future is laying on them. And I think that it's possible, but we need to work and we need to believe, because our young people are really depressed, that they don't see any hope. So we need to kind of engage them and give them hope that if you work hard, it's possible to change certain things, but you really have to keep going and pushing.
This is great, Velma. I know your project. I know your project, and I can really recommend it. I saw it as well. And Velma, thank you so much for your time, for the interview, and hope to see you next year. I'm coming in July. I hope you're there.
I will be there. I will be here. I'm not going anywhere. You know, I want to leave Bosnia. Everybody are saying like they want to go to the West. They have like all these like visions how beautiful will be over there, but they are not ready for that market. So I'm staying here. Yeah. And we will see each other. Thank you so much for the time. Thank you so much for the interest. And great. Yeah, we will see you. Okay.
I'll send you the link and see you next July, Velma.
Thank you so
bye-bye.
Much.
Bye bye. Bock, bock, bock.
Ciao, ciao.
So, das war Velma Šarić und jetzt habe ich euch zwei Statements versprochen von einer Veranstaltung, die diese Woche in Köln stattgefunden hat. Der Titel der Veranstaltung war 20 Jahre Frieden in Bosnien. Stabil, fragil, egal? Fragezeichen. Ich finde, das ist ein super Titel, sehr gelungener Titel, der auf jeden Fall provoziert und zur Diskussion anregt. Und diese Diskussion war auch sehr interessant und auch sehr lebendig. Das erste Statement ist von Judith Brandt. Sie ist Programmleiterin vom Forum Ziviler Friedensdienst in Sarajevo und sie spricht über diese ethnische Teilung, die immer noch in allen Lebensphasen spürbar ist. Und hört mal rein, vor allem, was sie zur Jugend sagt, die den Krieg eigentlich gar nicht erlebt hat. Aber trotzdem, der Krieg ist in den Köpfen der Kinder oder der Jugendlichen.
Man hat mit dem Friedensvertrag oder mit diesem Dayton-Vertrag die drei Gruppen, die oder der Krieg, der anhand oder entlang der ethnischen Linien geführt wurde, hat man entlang der ethnischen Linien einen Friedensvertrag ausgehandelt, der eben vorsieht, der gleichzeitig eine Verfassung für Bosnien vorsieht, ebenfalls entlang der ethnischen Linien. Das heißt, es gibt in der Verfassung von Bosnien-Herzegowina, das ist auch das, worauf die Verfassungsreform dann eigentlich später abzielt, eine Balance zwischen den drei verschiedenen Volksgruppen. Aber es gibt keine Bürger und Bürgerinnen in dieser Verfassung. Man hat Rechte als Angehöriger einer ethnischen Gruppe, als Angehöriger von serbischen Gruppe, als Angehöriger der Bosniaken oder als Angehöriger der Kroaten. Man kann so Präsident werden oder auch nicht Präsident werden, aber man kann nur gewählt werden, wenn man sich als eine ethnische Gruppe definiert. Und diese Definierung in ethnischen Gruppen, die zieht sich weiter durch. Die zieht sich nicht nur in den politischen Systemen durch, sondern die zieht sich auch in der Erziehung durch, im Bildungswesen, die zieht sich in der Gesellschaft durch, sodass man sich eigentlich immer irgendwie gedrängt fühlt, sich als irgendetwas zu definieren. Und diejenigen, die sich nicht definieren, haben entweder politisch weniger Rechte oder fühlen sich ein bisschen in der Minderheit. Es ist schwierig zum Beispiel, sich als Bosnier und Herzegowiner zu definieren. Sie konnten bis vor kurzem noch nicht mal ihr Kind als Bosnier und Herzegowiner anmelden, wenn sie zum Einwohnermeldeamt gegangen sind und ihr Kind, ihr Neugeborenes anmelden wollen. Da mussten sie sagen, ob es Bosniake, Kroate, Serbe oder anderes ist. Das können sie jetzt erst seit kurzem. Und diese Perpetuierung, diese Festschreibung, diese Zementierung dieser ethnischen Kategorien, die gegeneinander Krieg geführt haben, die führt bei Jugendlichen, wir hatten oft Gespräche mit Jugendlichen, mit jungen Erwachsenen, die sagten, für uns hat der Krieg noch gar nicht aufgehört. Für uns ist noch weiter Krieg, eben weil wir ständig in diesen ethnischen Kategorien denken oder uns das vorgelebt wird, uns das in den Medien so weiter vorgegeben wird, uns das in der Politik so vorgegeben wird. Wir als ethnische Gruppe müssen aufpassen, dass wir unsere ethnischen Interessen oder unser nationales Interesse gegenüber das der anderen schützen. Das ist so der Diskurs, der ständig läuft oder der im Vordergrund läuft. Bei all den anderen Problemen, die es auch noch gibt. Also man müsste sich natürlich um die Wirtschaft kümmern, man müsste sich um die Arbeitslosigkeit kümmern, man müsste sich Perspektiven für dieses Land überlegen. Aber das wird sehr oft überschattet von eben diesem Diskurs, unsere Interessen sind anders als die der anderen Interessen. Und so ist es für junge Leute. Auf der einen Seite möchten sie ein ganz normales Leben führen mit einer Arbeit, mit einem Beruf, mit Familiegründen. Aber sie haben ständig noch das Gefühl, sie sind in diesem Diskurs gefangen von ethnischen und von nationalen Interessen. Und sehr viele sagten dann uns, wir müssen uns, ob wir wollen oder nicht, ob wir den Krieg erlebt haben oder nicht, wir müssen uns irgendwie mit diesem Krieg beschäftigen. Wir müssen uns mit der Vergangenheit beschäftigen. Wir müssen damit aufräumen oder wir müssen daran arbeiten.
So, das war Judith Brandt. Und jetzt kommt Benjamin Pargan. Das ist ein Kollege von mir von der Deutschen Welle. Er leitet die Programmgruppe Südosteuropa und er spricht über die regionale Zusammenarbeit zwischen den Ländern und darüber, wie politisch uneinig sie sich sind, aber wirtschaftlich sind die voneinander abhängig.
Ja, das ist die regionale Zusammenarbeit, die wird hier gerne bei irgendwelchen Westbalkan-Konferenzen thematisiert, immer wieder, und die Jungs versprechen auch alle, die Regierungschefs, kaum sind sie zu Hause, da streiten die jetzt wieder miteinander, und das ist wirklich jetzt gang und gäbe schon seit 20 Jahren. Man hatte auch mit Recht auch in Serbien, aber in Bosnien auch Angst. Also genauso wie konstruktiv hat jemand hier das, glaube ich, gesagt, wie damals Slowenien konstruktiv mit dem kroatischen EU-Beitritt umgegangen sind. Man weiß, also die haben die Kroaten ganz brutal ausgebremst. Jetzt fragen sich Menschen in Serbien mit Recht, kann es uns auch passieren, dass genauso wie damals Slowenien Kroatien ausgebremst hat, dass die uns auch jetzt ein bisschen auf dem Weg in die EU blockieren. Allerdings ist es wirklich eine absolute Notwendigkeit. Das war mal ein Land, das ist wirtschaftlich in einem System sozusagen. Die brauchen sich da gegenseitig. Selbst der serbische Premierminister obwohl die Serben da häufig ihre Liebe zu Russland betonen, aber hat gesagt, Leute, als Markt ist uns ein kleines Bosnien-Herzegowina viel wichtiger als ein großes Russland, weil da hört häufig auch beim Geld Spaß auf und das wissen da auch jetzt teilweise in Serbien. Deshalb diese regionale Zusammenarbeit hat sich definitiv verbessert, das funktioniert schon jetzt besser. Die jetzige noch kroatische Regierung hat da auch eine sehr konstruktive Rolle gespielt und ich glaube in der Tat, die ganzen alten Sachen, dass die Menschen da in der Tat versuchen, dieses Land zu zerstückeln, glaube ich, sind erstmal vom Tisch.
So, das war Benjamin Pargan von der Deutschen Welle und das war es auch schon vom heutigen Podcast über Bosnien und Herzegowina. Ich hoffe, es hat euch gefallen und ich glaube nicht, dass ich noch vor Jahresende eine Folge hinbekomme. Deswegen wünsche ich euch einen guten Rutsch und feiert in Maßen. Also so, dass ihr euch danach noch erinnern könnt, wie ihr gefeiert habt. Und ja, wir hören uns im nächsten Jahr. Tschüss.